Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. This is episode 4 and this is Dr. Andrew Jones. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about pets with Alzheimer's, also known as cognitive dysfunction, including questions you can ask yourself to determine if your dog or cat has cognitive dysfunction. Then I'm going to be showing you 7 effective remedies. I'm going to be talking about a new study which shows the lesser known yet harmful effects of antibiotics. Then I'm going to answer a listener's question, why do cats purr? Plus, you can hear the world's loudest purr. A little bit about the podcast, Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. Just go to iTunes.com and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on the great podcast app called Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. You can also get the Veterinary Secrets podcast directly onto your phone with a cool little app by going here, vetsecrets.podbean.com/mobile/. That's vetsecrets.podbean.com/mobile/. Questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog or send me an email, which is at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. So let's get right into today's podcast. We're going to be covering a whole lot of things today. First, what is cognitive dysfunction? Well, clearly it's an increasingly diagnosed disease of dogs and some cats, especially now that our dogs and cats, our pets, are living longer. It's very similar to Alzheimer's in people. Animals accumulate a type of protein called beta amyloid, protein plaque in their brain with age. And then our dogs and cats can and do show similar signs to people with Alzheimer's. Pets with, it's also abbreviated as CDS or canine or cognitive dysfunction, may show signs of confusion and or various other behavioral changes that are not a normal part of aging. As with Alzheimer's, this can be very difficult, especially on our family members. Pets are less responsive, they can be forgetful, at times appear confused. So what is the prevalence? How common is this? Well, there's a study by the Animal Behavior Clinic that University of California in Davis revealed that 28% of dogs aged 11 to 12 and 68% of dogs aged 15 to 16 showed one or more signs of cognitive impairment. A similar study by Moffitt and Landsberg suggested that 28% of cats aged 11 to 14 years developed at least one sign consistent with cognitive dysfunction, and this increased over 50% for cats 15 years of age and older. Approximately 10% of people over 65 and 50% of people over 85 have cognitive dysfunction. Degenerative changes can be found in multiple areas of the brain with affected. So what are the common signs and symptoms that you need to be aware of? There's a number of them. I'm going to go through them here and list them. Increased sleeping, appearing confused, loss of training, such as a loss of house training, unable to recognize familiar people, a lack of interest in surroundings or events, increased drinking, increased urine, decreased, occasionally increased appetite, excessive panting, unusual behaviors such as staring at the wall, excessive barking, deafness, overall less interest or activity, thinking or appearing old. So what are the causes that we just discussed earlier? Obviously, your dog or cat in particular, they're considered a senior past the age, roughly the age of 7. Really, that's sort of been an old sort of veterinary average. Really, we know it's slightly older, and based on if you have a smaller breed of dog, that's more around the age of 9, similar to where a cat's more like 9-ish. But a very large breed, you know, think of something such as a Great Dane, they're almost considered senior at the age of 6. Most cats, as I said earlier, they're not even considered senior until the age of 10. Older pets, they have natural organ changes. Their eyes will often develop cataracts. The bones of the middle ear often fuse, resulting in lowered hearing. The joints often lose the soft protective covering and cartilage, resulting in arthritis, and then the brain can age, resulting in those signs of senility. Newer research has really been focused on the results of chronic inflammation, you know, such as reactions from grains in the diet, vaccine-induced inflammation, then secondary affecting the brain, causing this brain dysfunction. Some of the known contributors to cognitive decline that you should be aware of, and especially avoiding, if you know you've got an aging pet, they're already showing some of these symptoms. The barbiturates, such as the common drug for epilepsy, phenobarbital, Valium and related type drugs, any type of gas anesthetic, be it isoflurane, halothane. Drugs used to increase heart rate, typically during anesthesia. They're known as anticholinergics. Many of the chemotherapy drugs used for treating cancer. And then on top of it, and this is probably the biggest one you should all be aware of, probably one of the most commonly prescribed veterinary drugs, corticosteroids such as prednisone. And that would be used be treating, typically, you know, treating our pets that have allergies. I just want to give you a checklist of questions you can ask yourself about your pet, which may give you an indicator of perhaps they do have this cognitive dysfunction. Do they appear lost or confused in the house or in the yard? They fail to recognize familiar people. Do they fail to respond to verbal cues or names? Do they have difficulty finding the door? Do they appear to forget the reason for going outdoors? Do they seek attention less often? Do they walk away when being petted? Do they show less enthusiasm upon greeting you? Or do they no longer greet family members? Perhaps do they sleep more during the day? Maybe they sleep less during the night? Wander or pace around the house? You know, as we talked about earlier, just a lack or loss of house training, you know, such as urinating indoors, etc. Having accidents indoors soon after being outside, or it seems like they're almost forgetting to go outside. So if you're answering yes to many of those questions and you've got an older pet, likely they have some form of cognitive dysfunction. And before I just get into the variety of solutions, the first big point is recognizing that the brain is an organ that ages much the same as many of the other organs are aging in our body and in your pet's body. So it's not abnormal to have that. But the big point here is recognizing that. And then two, knowing that there are some additional things you can do or provide, in particular things within the diet that can help your dog or can help your cat. So what are they? First of all, I want to focus on the supplements in terms of antioxidants. I mean, these are those key nutrients that help decrease free radical damage, which is damaging the cells, and we know those are damaging the brain. These include taurine, flavonoids, coenzyme Q. Of all of them, vitamin E appears to be very important in maintaining healthy brain function, delaying further loss of brain tissue. The dose of vitamin E is 100 international units of vitamin E per 10 pounds of body weight daily. You can get an antioxidant combination, including vitamin E, vitamin C, and selenium. Melatonin. It's frequently used for older pets that are having trouble getting to sleep and pace at night. Melatonin also makes the mitochondria, that's these little certain parts of the cell, be more effective. For dogs, a typical dose is 50 micrograms per pound of body weight 1 hour before bedtime and on an empty stomach. You can try it for 2 weeks to assess if it is working. Exercise. The importance of this cannot be overemphasized. It is one of the easiest and least expensive remedies. Just get more oxygen to your pet's brain by having them exercise regularly. I mean, if you've got an older dog, they're having difficulty moving around, fine. Just modify the schedule and the level of exercise. You're taking them on a flat route. But make sure you're doing it consistently, preferably 3 times a day, at the minimum twice a day, and you're keeping them moving. I mean, obviously it's healthy for their brain. You're increasing oxygen to their brain. It also is beneficial to their joint. Because we know these older dogs that have arthritis, as an example, if we can at least keep their joints moving, it lubricates their joints, gives you more fluid within those joints, and actually gives them pain relief. So a whole bunch of benefits from exercise, and one obviously being helping for cognitive dysfunction and a normal functioning brain. Regular touch and positive interaction with your pet has been found that in people, that even though they may not remember an interaction, the human touch can stimulate parts of the brain that cause emotion. Then this has the effect of improving symptoms of Alzheimer's. The same principle can be applied to our pets. Easiest thing, we're just regular petting them. Maybe it's not necessarily therapeutic massage, but you're regularly contacting, positively touching your pet. Consider a seniors type diet. There's a number of different commercial type seniors diet. Typically, they're designed to be easier to digest, slightly lower in protein to be easier on the kidneys, moderate fat levels to help maintain a healthy weight. Sometimes you look at additional nutrients such as glucosamine, chondroitin to be beneficial for arthritis. There are a few specific brain type cognitive dysfunction diet, which are high in antioxidants and L-carnitine. Supplements. Some other supplements that you should be thinking about or considering. These include ones that help the nervous tissues, such as B vitamins, omega-3 fatty acids. And if you're looking at any dog that has especially signs of cognitive dysfunction, you want to make sure they're on a high dose of the essential fatty acids. So we're looking at 1,000 milligrams per 10 pounds of body weight daily. And if I equate that, that would be looking at feeding your dog a tablespoon of flax oil for about 40 to 50 pounds of body weight. So my dog, Jesse, he gets 1 tablespoon of flax oil a day. And he has some signs of cognitive dysfunction. He barks at the wall. He can't hear so well. He can't see so well. But that's his dose, one tablespoon of flax oil daily. Dose it based on body weight. So something like my dog Lewis, he's double his weight, he would get 2 tablespoons of flax oil daily. Curcumin. No question, new research in people has shown a strong link between chronic inflammation and degenerative brain disorders such as cognitive dysfunction. When I think of something, I'm thinking of the book by Dr. Perlmutter called Brain Grain. It's a hard word to say, vice versa. Very, very interesting research. More than anything, this is focused on this whole almost seen as epidemic, Alzheimer's and brain-related degenerative disorders seen in especially the North American population. And he's very much correlating it to our increase in wheat consumption and this chronic inflammation as a result of that. So researchers are implementing diets high in grains along with repeated vaccines as potential underlying causes, which is, when you think about it, it really makes sense or makes key. Like, why are we seeing all these degenerative changes? The active ingredient in the spice turmeric is curcumin and shown to be effective in people with Alzheimer's. The animal 95% curcuminoid dose is 100 milligrams per 10 pounds daily. It's easy to give as a capsule. You can get it as a capsule formulation. I currently have 400 milligram capsules that I've actually been treating my older dog Jesse with. It's also a great, not just great for brain inflammation, also great for inflammation in general. So it also seems to be beneficial for all these variety of inflammatory diseases. But in particular, you've got a dog, that aging dog or cat, and they have, you know, cognitive dysfunction symptoms or signs, then you should be considering curcumin. I mean, a wonderful, wonderful herb with virtually no side effects. As I said, the big thing is it really stains everything. It's bright, bright orange. So that's why the capsule formation is so nice. You can just pop it down their mouth. So let's get into the second part of today's podcast. It's a discussion about antibiotic use in a recent article, which talked about and showed that antibiotic use has more unwanted side effects than previously thought. It's an interesting study in that, I mean, clearly we're aware of it. And I think for many of you listening to the podcast, obviously, your bent is more natural or holistic in nature. So you've got concerns about antibiotics, and obviously they're designed. I mean, they're there to help deal with bad bacteria that are potentially can harm ourselves or our pets. But also understanding at the same point that when you're given the antibiotics, it's also affecting all the good bacteria. But there's more than that. So I just wanted to give you a summary of the article in a nutshell and a part of the study. And the source is Medical News Today, and the author of the article is Catherine Paddock. So here's a quick summary in a nutshell. One, antibiotic use is widespread. Around 40% of adults and 70% of children take antibiotics at least once a year, and billions of animals worldwide are treated with them. Not millions, but billions. I mean, think of antibiotics that are given in all these factory farms for cattle, for chickens, for pigs. Antibiotics can eliminate life-threatening infections, but about 1 in 10 people treated with them suffer adverse side effects. Antibiotic use, and overuse especially, is associated with a range of problems that affect, among other things, glucose metabolism, the immune system, food digestion, and behavior. They also suspect it is linked to obesity and stress. Antibiotics can destroy intestinal cells, blocking nutrient absorption. Sugar metabolism affect the gene that allows good gut bacteria to communicate, leading to disrupt digestion, cause diarrhea, and ulcerative colitis. But new research is also showing that it's linked to immune function, obesity, food absorption, depression, sepsis, or infections spreading throughout the body, asthma, and allergies. To get the entire article, just go to Medical News Today, and you can search it as well. And the title of the article is Antibiotic Use Has More Unwanted Effects Than Previously Thought. The big point here in terms of reading it is, one, so further reinforcing the need to be especially cautious for ever using antibiotics. Secondly, really questioning what we're doing by using them, especially chronically and long term. I mean, I didn't really understand there actually is a gene, getting to the importance of understanding how big our just natural bacterial biome is, so what's occurring in primary our intestines, ourselves, our animals, and how that communicates with the rest of the body, and that there's a gene that sends. I mean, it's this, you're thinking of trillions of bacteria in our intestinal tract, in our pet's intestinal tract, and this bacteria communicates, these good bacteria, so when there's different things going on in your body. For instance, you know, if you've got an allergy or an allergic reaction, you want that bacteria to respond appropriately. It send off the right immune cells to deal with it as an appropriate response. But when you've given those antibiotics, you've actually damaged that nice, that very protective lining of your intestinal tract, of your pet's intestinal tract. So then you're allowing things to be absorbed that shouldn't be absorbed. And then you're also damaging primarily your immune system is located in responding. So the big summary and the big take home I'm taking away from this article is, one, being very cautious of antibiotics. Two, look at using things that you can give to yourself or your pets that don't involve antibiotics. So one, trying to prevent these diseases in the first place. Look at something like the use of probiotics. Yes, probiotics antibiotics are key anytime you have to be on an antibiotic or your pets have had to be on an antibiotic. Secondly, to using these good healthy bacteria potentially to prevent disease, because we know they're linked to decreasing allergy symptoms or people or animals becoming allergic. We know that they're linked to potentially decreasing stress and some of these anxiety disorders in ourselves. We know that they're also linked for other, think of other diseases, many of the gastrointestinal diseases, vomiting, any type of diarrhea, a whole host of anything related to our immune system, because we're going to have a potentially more effective, appropriate immune response if we've got the right kind of bacteria that have colonized in our intestinal tract, and they can all work accordingly. If you're looking at something as far as supplement-wise, my dog and my cat supplement both have appropriate probiotics for dogs and for cats. The dog supplement is at the dogsupplement.com. It's called Ultimate Canine Health Formula. And my cat supplement is at the catsupplement.com. It's called the Ultimate Feline Health Formula. So let's get into the last part of today's podcast. A real interesting question that came from a listener. Why do cats purr? Great question. You know, I sort of seem to think, oh, I know the answer. But it was really interesting to do some research. I mean, cats purr for a variety of reasons. The comforting sounds are good for them, but also for us. But it's really interesting. It's easy to assume that our cats are purring because they're content. But research is showing that purring is likely more a means of communication and also a form of self-healing. Yes, your cat's going to purr when you stroke them, but they're also purr when they're frightened. And I can think of clients coming in with their cats to see me in the veterinary practice, and their cats started purring. So they're purring in response to fear. Think about it almost of yourself when you're smiling. Sometimes you're really nervous and you're going to smile. So maybe the same sort of actions is going on with your cat. So they're purring in response to, okay, how can I calm myself in this really nervous situation? I'm going to start purring. But what is a purr? I mean, how does it work? So it actually begins from a signal from the brain. There's something called a repetitive neural oscillator, which is sending messages to the laryngeal muscle. So that's the larynx, that little area also known as the voice box, causing them to twitch at a rate of 25 to 100 vibrations per second. This causes the vocal cords to separate when your cat inhales and exhales, producing a purr. Not all cats can purr. Domestic cats, some wild cats and their relatives, such as civets, mongooses purr. Even hyenas, raccoons, and guinea pigs can purr. We have a little guinea pig. She almost makes the sound of a purr. Cats that can't purr roar, and cats that roar can't purr. Yeah, I had no idea. It's very interesting. Roaring cats evolved this way for a good reason. These cats move around a lot to catch their prey. So they likely develop their roar to protect their prides and their territory. Purring cats, on the other hand, are generally smaller, more likely to be loners, and they don't have to compete with other for prey. They use scent to mark their territory, so they don't need this big, far-reaching way to communicate. So researchers at the University of Sussex examined the sound spectrum of 10 cats' purrs and found an unusual peak in the 220 to 520 Hertz frequency range embedded in the lower frequencies of the usual purr. Babies' cries have a similar frequency range of 300 to 600 hertz. Karen McComb, who headed the study, says cats may be exploiting the innate tendencies in humans to respond to cry-like sounds in the context of nurturing offspring. Interesting. I mean, one veterinarian, Benjamin Hart, was quoted as saying that cats are apparently learned to do this to get people to feed them sooner. Who knows? Possibly. Another scientist, Elizabeth von Magenthaler, believes that cats also purr to heal themselves. She says that frequencies between 24 to 140 vibrations per minute are therapeutic for bone growth, pain relief, and wound healing. She's recorded a variety of cat purrs, including those of the domestic cats, ocelots, cheetahs, and pumas, and discovered that the animal's purrs all fit in the range for anabolic bone growth. Purring isn't just good for cats, though. It's also healthy for us cat owners. Studies show that cats do a better job of relieving stress and lowering blood pressure than other pets. Yes, dog owners. In fact, a 10-year study at the University of Minnesota Stroke Center found that cat owners were 40% less likely to have heart attacks than non-cat owners, and purring just might play a role in that. Clearly, there's a whole bunch of benefits from purring, and it's much more than, you know, just a contented cat. You have benefits for us, benefits for your cat. So thank you for asking that question. Now, the last thing I wanted to conclude with was let you listen to the world's loudest cat. The name of this cat is Smokey. Smokey is a domestic house cat, also known like one of our regular cats. And Smokey earned a place in the record books with a purr that measured 67.7 decibels. And he's been recorded on previous occasions with a 92.7 decibel purr, which is equivalent to the noise of a lawnmower or a hairdryer. So I'm going to conclude the podcast with you listening to Smokey, who is most loud. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. This is Dr. Andrew Jones. As I said, if you've got any questions, feel free, please, to comment on my blog. It's at veterinarysecrets.com/blog. That's where I'm putting up all the podcasts, or send me an email, which is podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you again next week. This is Dr. Andrew Jones.